Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, June 14th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Becky Worley.
Behind the board is our excellent producer, John Slanina, a.k.a. Jammer B, filling in for Eric. Hey, John.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, thanks for filling in today. And also joining us to kick around some E3 news is Scott Johnson. Hey, Scott.
Hey, it's good to be back. I was here exactly 1 week ago. It feels like I kind of never left.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
We feel, too.
Thanks for not leaving. It was nice of you to just stay on the Skype connection all week long.
Indeed.
So Microsoft had their big press conference this morning, and almost everything had already been announced. That was what Sarah and I found when we were providing the play-by-play.
Yeah, we watched it in great detail. We provided commentary that most people seemed to like. Others
we apologize
kept telling us to shut
up. Those who thought we were a bit too cynical. But almost
we're waiting for the cool stuff.
Almost everything we'd already heard. It was called Kinect, K-I-N-E-C-T, in case you hadn't.
And we're talking about their new gaming technology that's an add-on to the Xbox 360. That's the news. The press conference was sort of you were mentioning it was just from Microsoft, but that's the news. This is the E3 news. And I was at the event last night, ergo my fantastic poncho that I'll tell you about later, but I just wanted to make sure people knew we were talking about their
news. And the other thing they talked about was, or we were waiting for, was the new Xbox 360.
Which we thought was, everyone had been calling it the Xbox 360 Slim.
Or the Stealth Box.
Or something along that nature.
But the official name is the new Xbox 360.
Not to be confused with
the Xbox
360 Original. Now, we don't know if it's the Xbox 360 Original Elite and the Xbox 360 Original Arcade, or if there's some other naming form factor.
It seems like they spent all their naming convention steam on getting something up called Kinect and going crazy with that spelling. And then when it came to naming the actual Xbox Slim, quote unquote, they just ran out of ideas and said, let's just call it the new one.
The new Xbox 360 is 250 gigabytes, built-in Wi-Fi, and same price as the old Xbox, $299, so expect the original Xbox to be sliced down in price. And something that I just saw on Engadget, the new Xbox 360 has a port that will allow you to power the Kinect without having to plug the Kinect in separately.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool, and it's a nice addition because one of the things that kind of drives people a little bit nuts about the original, I can call it that, the original Xbox 360, is that this had this gigantic power brick, and they all still have them. And even if you buy a brand new Elite or something that's been manufactured more recently, it still has this giant external brick. It's a little shorter than it used to be, not quite as heavy, but it's still this just big, obnoxious power source. I'm assuming that the new Xbox will also share this huge brick. But the idea that you don't have to have a second brick or at the very least a second power cord to deal with is a pretty nice feature.
Forget, it's also whisper quiet.
I love that you guys are hardcore gamers and you're so excited about the actual console, which is, you know, as a very casual gamer and more interested in what, like, really grabs consumers' attention. I could care less about the console and thought that the Project Natal Kinect technology was phenomenal. Did you guys get to see any of the demos?
Yeah,
we saw you demoing some stuff. It looked pretty fun.
Well, that was one of the reasons the press conference was so dull, is that you had already shown Kinect on Good Morning America this morning, and then immediately turned to Leo and showed it on our stream.
Right.
And there was a whole Cirque du Soleil press event last night where they showed off the Kinect. And is that what you're wearing?
Now we can talk about it. So for those of you that aren't watching, I am wearing a white poncho with shoulder pads out well past my hips, past pretty much my elbows. And every person at the Cirque du Soleil VIP red carpet event last night was pretty much forced to wear one of these jobs. And people obliged. The event was bizarre. There's a hilarious write-up, I think, in TechCrunch about how weird it was. But they did a good job of showing off the technology and what have you. And then at the end of the show, the shoulder pads started lighting up in different colors so that the audience members became their own sort of light show. I sort of feel like I'm a member of the Heaven's Gate cult wearing this thing, but everybody obliged. It was hilarious.
So it's not a protective,
bizarre.
It's not a protective device. It's decorative.
Purely decorative, and I wish you could see it, but the my shoulder pad is lighting up purple now. Now, you were supposed to give these back, but I had brought a big bag because I had some maternity clothes I was going to give to Natalie Del Conte if I saw her. So I shoved this underneath the jeans that have the roll-up that goes all the way to your bra, and I got it in my bag, but my bag was kind of glowing, so I scurried out of there just so I could bring this.
They'll
to
never
TS.
Dedication. Know.
Yeah, they'll never know. You know, it's weird. I honestly, for about 3 minutes, thought when I started seeing Twitters come in with these pictures of these people and these ponchos, I thought this is either some crazy Cirque du Soleil thing, which it turned out to be, or, and I'm not kidding, I'm not making this as a joke, I really thought they were going to have like Gallagher come out and
smash
some big watermelons.
Gear.
Exactly. And then he would show everyone how to do this virtually on a game console. They have some kind of Gallagher mini game. I was really prepared for that and a little sad it didn't happen.
Well, they could have had a Metal Gear Solid tie in there because we saw some of the new games coming for Xbox 360 in the future. And Metal Gear Solid Rising involved slicing everything apart with a sword, including a van.
A torso.
And at the very end, a watermelon.
And this is significant. This is kind of significant in a big way because Kojima and the guys behind the Metal Gear games have long been Sony stalwarts. They've supported Sony for a very, very long time. And it was only in recent years that you started to see their games eke over to the Xbox platform and PC and other platforms. I have a feeling that if this is not a Kinect-only game or one that is showcased for Kinect, and we're not really sure yet because they didn't say, but all this slicing and dicing had me wondering, if this is not that way, we'll probably see this on stage again at the Sony press conference. And they'll probably talk about it again because it'll be just one of these multi-platform titles. And that's kind of what they did last year with a couple of different titles. And they'll probably do it again this year. But it was really interesting to see Konami step up in this way with a major title from Konami and from the Kojima Studios and talk about it on the 360 like this. It's a bit of a catch. In fact, of the entire show, in my opinion, it was probably the bigger catch in terms of a third-party support. Yeah, a supported game.
We also saw Halo Reach, Gears of War 3, Call of Duty Black Ops, and Fable 3 demoed. What do you want, Becky?
I just want to just back out of this for 1 second and make a big point. The Project Natal Connect technology, playing it, how immersive it is, who they're marketing at, this is going to be epically huge come holiday 2010. This is going to do in the video game sales market what the Wii did 2 years ago. And I just think this is going to be a big thing for Microsoft. Just from a casual gamer perspective, I think this is a hit.
Now, they did show off a lot of Kinect. Kinect was really what they were highlighting in the press conference today. They talked about using it with Xbox Live so that you could pause movies and play music, not just with your hands, but with the voice recognition that comes with Kinect. They talked about video chat with Kinect, how you could watch a movie at the same time as someone else who has Kinect and interact with them while you're watching the movie. And they talked about all the Kinect games. The fitness game, the sports, the river rafting, all that sort of thing. And it did look very Nintendo Wii-like. So no, the hardcore gamer reaction has been...
I disagree.
Well, the hardcore gamer reaction has been, this is a toy. I don't see anything really awesome about this. I'm curious, Becky, what makes you think this is going to be so huge? And why regular people won't see it just as another Wii thing?
Because it's so physical. I mean, we were huffing and puffing and sweating, and you get off the couch, and it's so much easier to use even than the Wii in terms of setting it up. It recognizes you when you walk into the picture. It automatically goes to split screen when there are two people present, and then it goes back to a single shot when it's just one person there. The physicality of it was so different from Wii gaming, because in Wii gaming, you can cheat. This is whole body. You have to use your whole body, and it is a workout. And as a parent, you know, my guys are little, but if they were older, this would probably be the only type of gaming I would let them do because it is exercise.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to say, this is actually one of the problems. What Becky is saying is absolutely true, and they are putting in a level of physicality into this device that is unheard of in gaming. There's no question about that. But the problem is you got a lot of hardcores going, I don't want to play my games that way. I don't want to have a fake steering wheel out in front of me and having to move forward to do boost and move back to do brake. I want to sit on my butt and use a controller. The biggest complaints I'm hearing is not that the technology isn't working or that it isn't immersive, but that they don't want to play the games they like in this manner. They want to sit for a 40-hour stint of playing, an RPG of some sort. They don't want to get up and move around. They want to sit there and play it. It sounds lazy. It sounds terrible. But those kinds of games, you're not going to be able to keep it up. If you had to stand and do stuff the whole time, it'd be terrible. Now, for casual gaming, people are coming over to the house. There's six of us in the room, and we're going to party all night. That's a different animal, and I feel like Kinect is going to totally nail that market. I will agree with that. But there is a huge swath of players that are like, I don't want to drive a car like that. I don't want to fight. I don't want a fighting game like that. I just
totally
want to sit
agreed.
On my butt and play.
And I completely agree with you. And I think the most important takeaway from the perspective of a business story here is this is not Microsoft going after the casual gamer of today. This is Microsoft branding themselves with 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds right now. Mom says, okay, we can have this game in the house. And that gives them space to grow into RPGs, into first-person shooters, and they will be already branded to the Xbox technology. And that's what this move is about from Microsoft.
That's a good point.
A good point, too, about how a lot of gamers just don't want to change their habits. You know, they're doing things a certain way, and they want to play the games with. They want them. They don't necessarily want to, be standing there. And I always kind of feel like things like this where you go, well, what if there's five of you together or, even just two? That's fun. That's a great time. We saw Becky and Leo playing together, and we saw the screenshots afterwards, the little snapshots that the game takes, and it's a great time. But it's kind of like buying a big dining room table because you're going to do all this entertaining, but you never really do.
And that has been the knock on the Nintendo Wii has been people buy it and they play it a little bit and then they put it away and maybe pull it out every once in a while when guests come over, but they don't use it a lot.
Yeah,
that matter, though? Nintendo has made bank on this thing.
That's true. But it's also something that nobody's using.
I think Sarah's right in the sense that, but I also think it's true of some other kinds of games. I think Rock Band 2, for example, gets very little play in my house until there are people over. And then it's the hot thing in the room and everybody wants to play. I feel like Kinect will fill that need and do it in glorious fashion. But I'm still afraid in a household of a lot of gamers, my kids all play, I love to play, my wife plays, we're going to probably end up having it kind of be relegated to those times after the initial fun wears off of having it. But sitting alone playing that game does not make sense to me. However, the fitness application they showed looked really awesome, and I could see people using that quite a bit. That is miles ahead of what Wii Fit is trying to do or tried to do.
They showed Your Shape Fitness Evolved from Ubisoft, yep. But they're, what was not shown in the press conference but has been announced is the Biggest Loser Ultimate Workout, as well as the Deca Sports Collection and EA Sports Active 2.0. So most of these third-party titles are really oriented, if not around sports, around fitness.
And probably
one of the coolest things was that the depth sensor has 48 different points on the body that it recognizes. And so one thing they showed last night was in the fitness game, a yoga application. And if you're not doing the pose correctly, it'll show you all those points and where you're out of alignment and get you to move your body to do it right. I mean, I do yoga videos and stuff at home, but nothing gives you that kind of responsive feedback.
You're not worrying about batteries. You're not worrying about extra parts. I mean, that stuff really, really looked good to me.
You also don't have to go to the gym and be embarrassed if you're out of shape.
Right. You just have to be at home and be embarrassed.
You just do it within the comfort of your curtain-drawn living room.
Kinect is going to be priced at $149, according to a leaked GameStop screen that we're seeing on Engadget.com. And they also found a Kinect Elite bundle for $399 and a Kinect Arcade bundle for $299. So even though we haven't got any official pricing from Microsoft, if these leaks are accurate from GameStop with their pre-orders, then it's going to be a little pricey if you don't buy it with the bundle.
I would love to hear if Becky heard anything at show to confirm any of this. I know they didn't actually say anything about the cost of Kinect, and I don't know that they will for a while now. But I think for this thing to be the killer app they need it to be, one of the advantages the Wii had was that was the Wii. Everything you needed to be moving around and playing tennis was part of your purchase. You didn't have to buy stuff after the fact. And it's primarily the reason that their Motion Plus controllers have tanked, because it's an extra thing now people have to go get that they think they should have gotten in the first place. So Microsoft's going to be up against that. They're going to have to say, all right, well, you've all bought your $300 console, and we're now asking you to spend another $150 on this thing. I think, and bundles are great if you don't already have one, but if they don't have one, it's a harder sell. So I think that price point needs to be a little bit lower than that. I also don't really trust those numbers, because those tend to be what all the online retailers start to do. They start to sort of guess and put SKUs up, and they didn't know about that slim model yet, obviously, because there's not going to be an elite bundle. I guarantee it. There'll be some kind of bundle with the new one, and then there'll be a bundle with the old arcade one. And it just seems like they don't have all the information yet. So, Becky, did you hear anything at show that would give us any reason to believe that there'd be a price lower than that?
I spoke only with Microsoft about this, and so that's my only source, and they were not releasing any information. They said they have till September to get this thing to gold if they're going to release in November, so they're still moving a lot of pieces around. And I think you're right that the price point has to get lower, but one thing I think that is actually a benefit to what you were saying is that it's modular, in that if you already have the Xbox, this seems like a good way to sort of bring it up to date, and that may be appealing from a marketing perspective to people thinking about holiday gifts in 2010.
We should say November 4th was the date Microsoft announced that it will be available. $150 is the price we're seeing on GameStop, but that is not officially confirmed by Microsoft yet. And the last announcement we haven't talked about is ESPN on Xbox Live. So if you pay for Xbox Live Gold, you get ESPN streaming. They say over 3,500 live sporting events at no additional cost. Now, I've seen some rumors saying you have to have an ISP that's paying ESPN for the carriage of ESPN3. They didn't say that in the press conference.
No, there was no mention of that, but that wouldn't surprise me. Same idea as the World Cup stuff that's going on right now.
And this really is positioning the Xbox to be the media center. You buy this thing, you play the games, it's good for the family, you do some fitness stuff, and you also have the ability to rent movies, buy TV shows, stream TV shows, and now watch live sporting events. That's a huge one for a lot of people.
What am I not thinking of? If it's like 3,500 different games, and they only gave us a couple examples of college football games. There's a lot of colleges, I know, but...
There might be 3,500 college football and basketball games.
Really? Annually?
Well, ESPN Live often does MLB games, but you usually have to pay extra for the MLB. And they didn't show a single MLB game in that rotation.
And you'd think
rotation.
That they would, because that was something that you were excited about.
Exactly.
In theory.
So I think it's probably just the stuff you get on ESPN 3, which is what ESPN 360 became. Which is a lot of sports. You get a lot of college sports. You get a lot of off sports. I can't think of what professional sports are on there specifically, because most of the professional sports want to charge you. And I know NFL and NHL aren't on ESPN.
Well, at least it's
online,
not extra.
Online,
if you've already got a gold account. That was kind of a surprise. We were talking about it while we were watching the event. What's it going to be? Nothing.
Yeah. So there you go. That is the Microsoft press conference. We will still be streaming live tomorrow from the show floor at E3. Brian Brushwood and Leo Laporte will be out and about from 12 Pacific up until TNT time at 2:30, and then they'll join us for Tech News Today at that point. So if you want to find out what else is going on at E3, not just in the press conference area, but at the show floor, they'll have that. They'll also be passing along the announcements from Nintendo. We're expecting some kind of 3D DS or Nintendo HD Wii. Sony will probably be demonstrating their Move. Not expecting as big of announcements as we were expecting from Microsoft, but we'll be passing those along to you as well. We got to take a quick break before we get to the AT&T story. They've been sending out apologies, but I have to tell you that Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Let you watch your home TV anywhere you go. If you're like Becky and you had to fly down to L.A. and then you had to fly back and you're in the hotel room last night and you're bored and the hotel TV is just, doesn't have the selection. It doesn't have the channels that you pay for at home. You've got a Slingbox, no problem. You can pull it up on your mobile device, on your iPhone, on your BlackBerry, on your laptop. Watch all the TV you get on your home television network right on your mobile device without any kind of restriction, without any kind of extra subscription or anything like that. Anything that's recorded on your DVR from home, all those TV shows you need to catch up on, you can get those too. Pretty much your television programs you can watch live anywhere you are. News, movies, any kind of program type. Check out Slingbox. Just go to a Best Buy near you or visit them at slingbox.com/twit. So AT&T finally responding to the leak of email addresses from iPads, and they sent an apology email June 13th, 2010, dated yesterday, saying that this had affected some of their customers. They're very sorry about it. They apologize for the incident and any inconvenience it may have caused. Rest assured, you can continue to use your AT&T 3G service on your iPad with confidence. And then they go on to describe how the hackers did it. And they actually describe it in some detail. They say the self-described hackers wrote software code to randomly generate numbers that mimicked serial numbers of the AT&T SIM card, called the integrated circuit card identification, and repeatedly queried an AT&T web address. They go on to say the hackers deliberately went to great efforts with a random program to extract possible ICC IDs and capture customer email addresses. And then they have some more detail, and they assure you that the email address and ICC ID were the only information that was accessible. Your password, your account information, the attack was limited. AT&T takes your privacy seriously. There's nothing to worry about. Well, Goatsy Security, the people who claim to have done this attack, came out on their blog and said AT&T called us malicious. They didn't like the way they were referred to, and they've been mailing their subscriber base about this, and so they started to skewer AT&T. They said, why did it take so long for them to get back? Why they had plenty of time to inform the public before the disclosure wasn't done. Post-patch, they took forever. And they try to claim that this breach is a lot more serious than AT&T is leading on. What do you guys think? Is this a little war brewing in here, or is this just more posturing?
I have a hard time with taking Goatsy Security seriously when I'm also looking at their webpage.
Because of their logo?
Yeah. It's like I got to scroll down and then, you know, take a breather and go, okay. I mean, you know, there's two different stories here. I mean, at the very least, I would have liked AT&T to give me a couple free months of service or something.
Yeah, all you got was an apology.
And an email, too, which is a little ironic. Hey, look at that. I mean, this sounds a little bit like some of the conversations we were having last week about, you know, if there's a patch that, you know, can close a vulnerability that's dangerous and a company doesn't do it and they know about it, I mean, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
I think Goatsy Security is really trying to get a name for themselves, and it rubbed them the wrong way that AT&T called them hackers and said they had to go to great lengths. Goatsy said, we didn't really have to go to that great a length. This wasn't a hard hack, and they're right about that. Getting the email addresses was not that difficult. It was just a sort of throwing enough ICC ID possibilities until you got a hit, and then it pre-populated the email address. So AT&T, I think, is trying to sweep a little bit of this under the rug, if you will.
I know that I can sometimes be a little bit of a corporate apologist because, you know, I just feel like sometimes we get hyper reactionary around any of these, you know, privacy issues for good reason. But in this case, it just doesn't seem like a big deal. It became a big deal because it was about the iPad. If it hadn't been about the iPad, nobody would have given a rip. So I think this is a little bit of a tempest in a teapot, and it's a publicity opportunity, certainly, for Goatsy as they move forward. Well, that being said, you don't want your email address out there. So I see the big picture, but at the same time, it's a big deal because it's the iPad.
If this ICC ID could be used for something else beyond just getting your email address, then it becomes more serious. eWeek had a good story where they talked to a couple of security researchers that said the ICC IDs could be used to determine the international mobile subscriber identities. And if that were the case, with an IMSI in hand, it would be easier for an attacker to potentially find a person in an area by doing an IMSI catcher. So you scan for mobile devices, you find an IMSI catcher, and if you've got the ICC ID correlated to that IMSI, then you know who that is and you know where they are. And through that catching, an attacker could potentially intercept control messages, other data that might not be protected. 3G is pretty well encrypted, but the GSM side isn't. So there is no known way to directly compromise or control a user's iPad, but you could get some more information about them. That said, this is fairly hard, fairly unlikely, and you'd have to be in the same general proximity as the attacker. So Goatsy Security is not wrong when they say, hey, this could be used for some pretty nefarious stuff. But AT&T's not wrong when they say, well, it's pretty unlikely.
Yeah, that's like born identity hypothetical situation. I'm not saying it's not possible, but really?
Yeah, it seems like kids throwing snowballs at the old man up the street a little bit. And the old man up the street cannot understand why these long-haired hippies with the weird logo that's completely disgusting are being so pesky. And on the other hand, the kids are like, nah, we know what we're doing. It's a new time. It's a new age. And it feels like that on kind of an epic corporate scale. And it'll probably go away as quick as we heard about it, because in the end, like Tom says, it's just not as bad as they say it is. These guys are trying to make a name for themselves, and that's what kids do when they throw snowballs at my grandpa.
They should really stop throwing snowballs.
They're trying to make names for themselves.
Yeah.
Or Scott's grandpa.
Makes grandpa cold. I tell you what I would not have believed if you told me it was happening. Free Wi-Fi in every Starbucks in the country starting July 1st.
Maybe I ought to start liking Starbucks a little bit more. They're not going to kick me out after 2 hours or make me pay.
Yeah, this is a big deal. They're actually, on July 1st, going to get rid of the authentication. One click, no authentication, free access to Wi-Fi. You don't even have to be an AT&T subscriber to get free Wi-Fi in a Starbucks. In addition to that, next fall, they're going to be providing a Yahoo portal in connection with Yahoo that'll give you free versions of the Wall Street Journal, Zagat Guides, New York Times, USA Today, and a free Pick of the Week iTunes download.
Sounds to me like Starbucks will try anything to get people to come to their store.
Yeah.
We'll give you free newspapers. You bring your laptop. You can sit here all day. I mean, because it's sort of like, so I used to live down the street from this cafe, and they'd give us 2 hours of free Wi-Fi, and after that you would have to pay, or you move on. And that always seemed kind of fair to me, because I don't want to sit in a seat that somebody else could use. But while I was there for the 2 hours, I'd get something to eat or drink, because it felt like otherwise I'd just be mooching off of this Wi-Fi. But I think you'd do that anyway. You know, you're not going to sit in Starbucks, have one coffee, and be there for 8 hours. You know, you'd probably feel guilty enough to go up and get something else. So they're probably figuring that this whole sort of act of kindness, they're going to come out ahead. That's what I would
maybe say. That it was a reaction, too, to the economy and seeing profits go down. But that's not the case. They were up 4% in the last quarter, earned $241 million. Their business is booming. They didn't have to do this. This wasn't a response to downturn in business.
How else could they afford to give you free Wi-Fi?
True.
Well, they also closed a lot of stores in the last couple of years.
I think what they're really doing here is they have a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's happening and changing in the way that we consume digital media. They know that we're moving a lot more to notebooks, and even more so to smaller devices, iPads, iPhones, Android devices. And the more that happens, the more people are going to need a place that they can go hang and feel cool, and they're going to provide it. It's as simple as that. They want to be able to ride that same wave of the technological shift to holding a bunch of handheld devices, and why not let them be the guys that bring you the service for free?
I thought you were going to say the reason they're doing this is to plant malicious software on your machine while you're not looking, because you're using the free Wi-Fi.
They want your email address. So
Goatsy may think that, but I don't.
Yeah. All right. We have another announcement from Apple changing the SDK rules. This time, the famous Section 332, which prevents you from compiling code in alternate development other than C, C++, and the other approved methods. Notwithstanding the foregoing, now Apple adds, with Apple's prior written consent, an application may use embedded interpreted code in a limited way if such use is solely for providing minor features or functionality that are consistent with the intended and advertised purpose of the application. So, if you want to use Lua or maybe Unity to make some elements of your game, as many games on the iPhone platform do, you're allowed to do that now.
Well, that's probably good, because there's a number of games that use some of these open standards already. Not open standards, but these engines and things that are based on the technology that was, you know, sort of previously looking like it was, you know, under some kind of duress. But to lift that is good for some of these guys. I see this as nothing but good for game development on the platform.
Well, this is essentially Apple backing off a little and saying, you know what, the impulse here was not as pure as us saying you have to use Xcode development tools. They've backed off and said, oh, is that making it hard for you guys to make your games? No problem. We'll give a little tweak here, because really what we want is to screw Adobe.
Right. Flash is what we have a problem with. You guys are fine.
We can't just come out and ban Flash, you know, because then the SEC gets on us and everything. So we're going to keep tweaking this. That's what it seems like. Is that what's going on?
Well, there was probably a blow up a little bit. I mean, if I was using the Unity 3D engine, which many games are using now, and I was suddenly being told, sorry, but that platform is not allowed under this SDK rules, I would be flaming ticked, and I would call Apple, and there's some fairly big names out there using that under some pretty decent sized publishers in terms of mobile gaming anyway. And they probably, you know, bowed to that pressure a little bit. That had to do something with it, I'm sure.
Yeah, they didn't want to lose all of that App Store money that comes from all these gamers, for sure.
Flaming ticked. Whoa. Sorry, that was great. I want to see Scott flaming ticked one day.
He's flaming ticked, I tell ya.
One of my stupid sayings. It's a good one, a I good guess. One.
No, Toyota officially announces it will be building an electric vehicle with Tesla. When are we going to see this, Sarah?
Well, they're saying we'll see a car this year. It's already June, halfway through it even. I mean, so the story is people go, well, didn't we already know this? They had announced a partnership. They were going to reopen this closed plant in Fremont, California. The NUMMI plant, which was going to be part of the new partnership to build Tesla cars, one might think. And this was actually really good news, because when the plant closed, a lot of jobs were lost, and, you know, people in the Bay Area were kind of freaking out about it. And I'm sure the people of Fremont are excited. But now they're saying, okay, not only, you know, this is all happening, but we're making a car and it'll be available by the end of the year.
You better hurry up and open up that plant.
Right? I mean, I'm not a real expert on building electric cars, but that seems pretty soon, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing that's really weird about that from a time perspective is that Tesla hasn't delivered yet on their S model sedans.
Right.
Those are coming out in 2012. So the weird thing is that they're just announcing this, and they haven't even gotten their own production together. So there's something weird going on that we don't see here, because how they're going to get that ramped up and online is kind of mind-boggling.
Well, they're collaborating on a prototype EV, and it will be ready later this year. I think they mean the prototype will be ready, it's still fast.
Well, no, it says Toyota wouldn't confirm it was working with Tesla on an actual vehicle until now. Well, I see what you're saying. I'm not sure what they're saying.
Well, we'll see a prototype at the end of the year. We'll hold them to that. Anything else?
I think they're excited. They got all this bad press. They want to do something that's ecologically awesome and kind of cool and techy. And I think it's just a great way to shift PR to something that's just a little bit positive and puts them on a road that's not so negative. Because poor, I almost said Nintendo, poor Toyota with all the stuff they're going through. I don't know why Nintendo came up, but sure.
Twitter's going to start selling area in their trending topics. So you'll
this
be able to buy an
ticked.
Ad. Does this make you flaming tick, Sarah?
She's flaming ticked.
Why don't you want to see an ad down there in the trending topics? What's wrong with that?
Because the trending topics are supposed to be an actual indicator of what people are talking about on Twitter. And the top terms are what are reflected in that area. So if we're all not talking about Nintendo, sure, if you search for the word Nintendo, you're going to get some search results. So Nintendo goes out there and buys itself a spot in the trending topics, then unless it is very clearly marked as a sponsored area that I'm going to ignore, it is going to skew what I think is actually being talked about on Twitter. And I don't like that, and I will collapse that area of the Twitter homepage. Absolutely.
I think
depends on how it's going to look.
Will be okay. And I think because Twitter has been very good at the way they've implemented these things. So I think it will be like you're saying, where there will be a very clear ad separated from the trending topics. It's not like they're going to pretend like the paid placement is trending and just kind of stick it in there and you'll never know. I think that would be reprehensible. People would revolt against that. And I think you're right. I think it will be, you're in the trending topics area, and like Google AdWords, there'll just be another ad down there that says, like, you know, sponsored trend, Nintendo.
But the thing is, though, is that think about what trending topics are. Yeah, okay, so maybe it's, you know, the text is in a different color, where it's, I don't think Twitter's out to confuse the public at large. But why is it trending topics is about trending topics, not about bought placement.
These trending
topics.
No, but
one of the things that Twitter's trying to do to differentiate its advertising is to keep it incredibly topical. So if they can place something that fits in that trending scheme in at the right time, they say that provides value to users, not just value to sponsors.
So we'll see a lot of advertisements for the record company that makes Justin Bieber's records.
The record companies.
It actually, in the case of Justin Bieber, it might be good to not let the public just run the show.
You know what, Tom? What you're saying there actually isn't a terrible idea. To just take it a little bit further. So let's say you've got your trending topics. Don't sell space there. Do a Google Ads sort of thing that feeds off the trending topics and produces advertising that way. We've all sort of shown that we're okay with that. That seems like that's a little bit, it doesn't change the trending topics or doesn't trick a few people into thinking that buying that thing is a trending topic. But at the same time, it can generate ads and, you know, solve both sides of the coin. And, you know, it may not be that simple, but it seems like that's a known way of doing it.
Couple more stories to wrap up on. Quantcast just released new data that shows the mobile operating system's current market share in North America. The iOS, which is formerly the iPhone OS, 58.8%, Android 19.9%. So you may think iOS is dominating, but don't forget that iOS includes not just the iPhone, but iPod Touch and the iPad as well. And also, ReadWriteWeb points out that if you compare January 2009 to May 2010, Android OS has gone from 5% market share to 20%. That's a big jump. And iOS has dropped from 75% share to 59%.
That's a huge drop.
That's a big drop. And it all seems to be going to Android because RIM and the other OSs are pretty much flat in that time.
Can I add one thing? I question these numbers because Nielsen came out with their mobile ratings for Q1 just before the Apple WWDC, and Steve Jobs actually quoted them in the keynote. And they were, I think, different in terms of my takeaway. Tell me, this is what they said. They said 26% of the population has a smartphone, 35% BlackBerry, Windows Mobile 19%, 28% for the iPhone, 9% for Android.
Now, are those worldwide?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know.
Because that might explain the difference. These are just North America. And that's a good point, Becky. I mean, you could do all kinds of things by slicing and dicing the numbers different way, using different regions. Talking about market share in terms of devices or the number of times people have hit a website. So it definitely changes what these numbers mean and how they're calculated and what elements you use to calculate them.
One of the big picture things that I took away from this that helps me to see this is that iPhone and Android gained 2% each, and BlackBerry and Windows Mobile lost 2% each. So that helped me to kind of get like a very simplified what's happening here view of this. And I'll double check and see if they are worldwide or just U.S.
I always take these numbers with a grain of salt or perhaps a nice tablet of chocolate. In fact, we have a story here today about a man who loved his wife so much that he bought her an iPad and encased it in chocolate.
So we've got some pictures of what he did, and A for really going the extra mile on this, buddy, because what he did was he bought the iPad, took it out of the box, wrapped that in plastic so, you know, nothing's going to get in.
Wrapped in
covered
plastic.
That plastic in chocolate, froze the chocolate, had it frozen. That got wrapped in plastic. Then this was delivered to his loving wife. Now, they've got this whole unwrapping thing going on because, of course, she's probably like, what is this? Oh, it's this big chocolate, you know, something written on it. Maybe there's like, I love you inscribed or whatever. And then you see her like going in with a knife, trying to get in here. You know, he may have had to say like, well, here's a knife. See what's under there type of a thing. And then of course she's happy because she understands what's going on there. First of all, if you're going to give me an iPad, please don't make me work for it.
Not even with delicious chocolate?
No. Give me the chocolate.
This
in
is
a separate
Paul
box.
A. Young fine chocolate.
I can eat my bonbons while I'm playing with my iPad. I don't need to ruin my bonbons just to get to my iPad. I mean, it's a very cute idea, but I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, what if she would have the knife would have gone a little haywire, and now she's got a got a nick in her new pad.
Stefan Magdalinsky, if you're ever trying to impress Sarah, don't wrap the iPad in chocolate.
Chocolate separate. I'll eat the chocolate. I'm not saying we don't like chocolate. Just saying.
All right, we got a couple of voicemails we need to get to here. First one comes from Greg. He's a math teacher, and we've been talking a lot about Google and the sniffing of the Wi-Fi and whether they were justified or not, and Greg has some ideas of why they might be fine.
Hey, guys, this is Greg, the math teacher near Raleigh, North Carolina. The analogy everybody's been using about Google and the Wi-Fi stuff is, you know, if you leave your door unlocked, can somebody come and steal things? No, of course not. The better analogy I use is, if you have an argument with your spouse about the intimate details of your life, and the bedroom window is open, and I'm sitting down there on the street, and I happen to have a tape recorder running, and I get parts of it on tape, can you blame me? No. Close your blasted window and encrypt your Wi-Fi. That's how you do it. That'll keep Google from getting any of that information. Thanks a lot, guys. Love the show.
So is Wi-Fi like overhearing? Or is it like walking in and taking things out of an unlocked house?
Yeah, I don't think it's the same thing. I mean, if you and I are yelling and it's a summer day.
As we are upstairs in the Twin Cottage often.
We've gotten very sick of each other over the last couple of weeks. And you're sitting outside. You've parked your car. There's an open space. The windows are down. And you hear us and go, Then that's a little bit different than actually sniffing out data on an open Wi-Fi network.
Hey, Becky, your mic's all
crinkly.
Yeah.
My back there?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, get the hair.
It was down in the valley there. I don't know what was... Sorry. I think we're back. Okay. It's not a big valley.
It's an uncanny valley.
It sounds like a wonderful place, the Worley Valley. Anyway,
down in the valley. Never mind. One thing. I think the analogy is better when we're talking about from a legal perspective that you're having an argument with your spouse on a cordless phone and somebody has a scanner out in the driveway and you may have an analog cordless phone that's broadcasting that anywhere. So that's what we're talking about legally because this has to do with wiretapping. It's the perception of privacy. And the second thing, so Google just put out this 27-page document from a third-party analyst, Stroh Friedberg. I read 20 of the pages. It was exciting. And their defense has nothing to do with this analogy. Their defense is that they separated the data into header data and then content payload data. Everything was taken as a raw stream and saved onto the hard drives. But they only parsed and put into memory the header data, which they were collecting SSIDs, MAC addresses to use in their mobile. We've talked about this before in terms of how they help to locate mobile phones that are running Google software. So their point is we recorded everything, but we only used and looked at the header data, which isn't private data. What do you guys think?
Well, if it was just header data, that would be fine. And maybe that's what they'll find when they go through it. And that makes sense to me, because if you're just scanning around trying to find an SSID, that's not illegal. You're not spying. So if it's unencrypted and you're getting some headers and you go, oh, nope, don't need to make a connection, I think they would have a defense there. And I think wiretapping, when you brought up wiretapping, that is the best way to evaluate this, because it may be illegal to record someone's conversation without their knowledge, even if it is happening through an open window and you're out on the street.
I've had this a lot of times in terms of doing video production. If you're in a public place where people do not have the perception of privacy, then in certain states, you can record audio. But if there is the perception of privacy, that's when it becomes a no-no in specifically states that have put the kibosh on this type of
It's all about the expectation, absolutely. All right, we got another voicemail. This one comes from someone who had an expectation of privacy in that they didn't give us their name. but they wanted to take us to task about our disgust with tape backup.
Hey, guys, just finished listening to show number 9 and wanted to comment on the tape backup and the games industry portion. Tape backup to kind of the industry standard, or tape is the industry standard, I should say, for going backups. It's one of the things that I deal with on a weekly basis. It's cheap and it works, and out of a few years, I've never seen a failure.
Maybe that's why he's anonymous, because his tape backup started to fail there. But the point is well taken. And we got several emails to the same effect where people are like, hell no, tape is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So now we know.
The more you know. Emails, you can send them to tnt@twit.tv. By the way, the phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW if you'd like to call us. So, Crash wrote in and said, Xbox Kinect. Feeling a bit of hate from the hardcore gamers, but I think we're missing a point. Yes, it's a toy, but for most of us, computers and advancements in computer technology first entered the home through the vehicle of toys and games. I hope this is the vehicle that will bring motion control out of the labs and into our homes. We had space mice for years before the Wii surfaced and no one cared. Home users don't want a motion remote and a touch interface just doesn't work on the desktop or in the living room. What we want is Minority Report, and it looks like we may finally get it.
This is definitely a step towards that idea. There's no question that there is a Minority Report-like thing happening with Natal. The bigger issue is how much of this is a baby step towards something greater. When Sony gets up tomorrow and touts 3D as the awesome thing for video games, which I am complete disagreement with unless they show me something amazing, I need to also accept the fact that that is a baby step towards something better without glasses and without goofy setups and without super expensive TVs to have to replace everything. So I agree. I mean, as much as it's easy to make fun of some of these presentations and some of these high-minded ideas, these are the ingredients of our future, and I'm stoked to see what comes after this. I'm more excited about what Natal 2 is, or what, you know, Sony does in 8 years or 10 years. And these things are just going to get crazier and cooler as we go.
Crash was even wondering if we'll bring this to Windows. I think that'd be cool if you could actually, you know, just control your computer that way.
Minority Report for everyone. Should we read another email?
Yep.
This one comes from a fellow named Daniel. Hi, Team TNT, he says. And this is in reference to talking about getting 3D on your TVs and living rooms without 3D glasses. With regards to Episode 9 and the story of scientists being able to project images to the viewer by tracking their eyes, Sarah said, why would anybody want to watch the same TV while viewing the same screen? And I think what he means is my question, why would anybody want to watch the same TV but view different things on the same screen? You know, if you've got two people and they're watching two different things. He says, things that came to my mind is gaming. Imagine playing all those games with split screens. You can have the whole screen to yourself while playing with three of your other friends that are sharing the same TV as you. Everybody can have a personalized view of their character while still being able to play in the same living room. Good point. I hadn't even thought about that. I like the idea. For all those parties.
Instead of having that crazy Mario Kart split screen where you're limited, in some games you have to not look at the other guy's side, you could just have it totally blocked off. That's pretty cool. Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. You can send your emails to tnt@twit.tv. Becky, you're going to try to be with us tomorrow, right?
Wednesday. Tomorrow, Sarah's going to fill in for me. Wednesday, I'm going to be attempting the miraculous Skype in from the Red Carpet Club.
Oh, it's Wednesday. That's right. Tomorrow, we've got Leo and Brian. Then Wednesday, you're going to try to be with us. And then you'll be back regular on Thursday, right?
Yeah, I'll be back Thursday.
All right, cool. So check that out. We will have some more E3 coverage tomorrow. Scott Johnson, thanks for joining us and talking about games.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Anytime, Tom. Thanks for having me once again.
Don't forget to tell people where they can find you elsewhere on the internet.
Well, since we're talking about video games, let's recommend they check out the Final Score podcast that I host with Brian Dunaway. You can find it at finalscoreshow.com or just search iTunes for Final Score. And we talk all about games like we did today.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Sarah. And thank you guys for watching. That's it for Tech News Today. You can find us online at twit.tv/TNT. Email address is tnt@twit.tv. And the phone number, 260-TNT-SHOW. See you tomorrow.